This is KMXD Kodiak, 100.1 FM. KMXD is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxd.org. Here in Kodiak, it's overcast, 32 degrees, east winds, 6 miles per hour. Today it's supposed to be partly cloudy, although I'm not seeing any patches of blue out our windows here. Slight chances of snow showers throughout the day, little to snow accumulation though. Highs in the upper 30s, lows down to the mid-20s. Tonight's going to be mostly cloudy, chances of snow showers in the evening, but the forecast has mostly sunny Saturday and Sunday, so hopefully we can get out and enjoy some of that nice weather. Here in the Midday Report, we're going to hear about what happened with the electric outage from yesterday afternoon. We'll have more context after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. As patients face fewer IVF treatment options in Alabama, the Senate Republicans' campaign arm is now urging GOP political candidates to express support for access to fertility treatments. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports on the latest reaction to the Alabama Supreme Court's ruling last week that declared frozen embryos are considered children under state law.
A memo from the head of the Senate GOP campaign committee cites overwhelming public support. 85% of respondents in polls back continued access to in vitro fertilization treatments. It urges candidates to publicly oppose any restrictions to IVF or other fertility treatments, adding, quote, framing such opposition as a defense of family values and individual freedom. Democrats argue Republican candidates have established records opposing women's reproductive freedom, and the issue will be a key focus in November's races to determine control of the Senate. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley said she sided with the Alabama court's ruling and considered frozen embryos babies. Haley's getting ready for tomorrow's GOP primary in her home state and faces a tough battle to overcome former President Donald Trump's overwhelming lead in the polls. In Berkeley County, Haley raised the matter of Trump's age.
Don't you think we need to have mental competency tests for anyone over the age of 75? Look, I'm not being disrespectful when I say that. We all know people over the age of 75 that can run circles around us.
Trump's 77, President Biden's 81. President Biden's formally announced sweeping sanctions against Russia over Russia's invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago tomorrow. The sanctions also target Russian officials who oversaw the incarceration of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who died suddenly a week ago. The Washington, D.C. public radio station WAMU is laying off 15 people and closing its local news site, DCist. NPR's David Folkenflik reports the station's leaders say it's part of a renewed focus on audio.
WAMU's chief executive, Erica Pulley-Hayes, told staffers that some positions for audio specialists and producers will be added, and that the station intends to start a new local radio show and to expand political coverage throughout D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. She says the audience has not been as loyal to the DCist brand as WAMU itself. That said, numerous laid-off staffers said they did reporting in audio and digital platforms alike, including podcasts. Jen White, host of the WAMU-based show 1A, posted on X that she was heartbroken, writing, quote, "The steady loss of local coverage is devastating for communities and our democracy." The WAMU cuts follow a year of media layoffs across the country, including in public radio, newspapers, and digital outlets, all at a time when other sectors of the economy are humming along at a healthy clip.
That's David Folkenflik. This is NPR News. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre reacted today to the death of Nex Benedict, a 16-year-old Oklahoma student whose family says was routinely bullied at school because of their gender identity.
As a parent, I was absolutely heartbroken to learn about Nex Benedict's death. Every young person deserves to feel safe and supported at school.
Local Owosso authorities have been under pressure to disclose details of Benedict's cause of death earlier this month, a day after the teen was beaten in the girls' bathroom at school. The cause of death is still under investigation. For decades, the Hugo Awards have honored the best in science fiction literature, but now the prestigious award is facing controversy over potential nominees being flagged for their political beliefs. Here's NPR's Andrew Limbong.
The Hugo Awards are run by the World Science Fiction Convention, and the host city last year was Chengdu, China. After the winners were announced, there were authors missing from the long list who many fans figured were shoo-ins for at least a nomination. Diane Lacey was part of the Hugo Awards committee that year, and she recently leaked emails showing she was asked by Hugo administrator Dave McCarty to scan the English language nominees for potential red flags.
Mentions of Tibet, Taiwan, anything that would be seen as a problem in China.
McCarty has since stepped down from his role as Hugo administrator, and organizers for this year's awards to be held this summer in Glasgow are vowing more transparency to regain trust among fans. Angela Limbong, NPR News.
The Dow's closed up 62 points to end the day at 39,131. It's NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
It's 12:06 in Kodiak. I'm Brian Vanois. It's time for the local news. At least 2,000 Kodiak residents lost electricity around 3:30 yesterday afternoon for about an hour as a power outage swept across some neighborhoods within city limits and the Menashka Bay area just north of the city. According to the Kodiak Electric Association's outage map, 40% of residents in town were experiencing a loss of power. In Menashka Bay, all 753 residents were without electricity as well. Darren Scott is the president and chief executive officer of Kodiak Electric Association. He says something disturbed one of the city's transmission lines and caused the electricity to ground itself out, which shut off power in one part of town.
Somewhere on the transmission line between the substation that goes up Pillar Mountain and the substation near downtown, a fault happened on that line.
The outage did not reach downtown Kodiak. However, it did affect some essential businesses within city limits, like grocery stores on Mill Bay Road. Scott says the utility provider does not know exactly what caused the outage, but one of Kodiak's many birds could have been interfering with the substation.
We're not sure. It could have been an eagle. We do not have one identified, but the fault acted similar to what an eagle interaction would be, but we are not sure.
That's similar to what caused a power outage last week that affected downtown and parts of Mission Road as well as Razanoff Drive. Scott says an eagle flew into one of the substations in that instance. Power was restored to all residents by early evening after yesterday's outage, and KEA's outage map shows the electrical grid is normal today. Taking a look towards the Alaska Peninsula, the Bristol Bay community of Chignik lost power and phone service last week after an avalanche covered its road to the airport, destroying a main power box in the process. KDLG's Christina McDermott reports the community worked together for several days until the power was restored.
The avalanche spilled across one of Chignik's main roads, cutting off some of the homes and the airport from the rest of the community on Friday night. Chignik's mayor, Robert Carpenter, says there were no deaths or injuries from the avalanche. He says it did destroy a power box, leaving the community's roughly 100 residents without power. The community lost phone service as well.
It pushed a container across the road and almost into the slough. Also a flatbed truck, a skiff, which was in pieces, and took out a power box.
Carpenter says that a city crew was able to clear the avalanche debris off the road a few hours later and began to speak with state emergency services the next morning. But he says the community had to wait several days before linemen could get to Chignik to repair the damage to its power system. Chignik's runway was too soft to land planes at the time, so the state's Department of Transportation arranged for a repair crew to travel to the community via helicopter. But bad weather meant the crew wasn't able to reach the community for 4 days. It restored power on Tuesday evening, with GCI arriving and finishing phone service repairs shortly after. While they waited, the community relied on small generators to keep their homes heated. Carpenter says it took a couple days to distribute the generators, which came from the city, Chignik residents, and the nearby community of Chignik Lagoon, who sent them by boat. Carpenter says that residents with Starlink, a satellite internet service, helped keep the community connected to the outside world. Lana Anderson works at the city's office. She says that residents on small generators prioritized what they needed to power at home.
We couldn't have all our appliances on, so we'd alternate between the most important things, such as the heat.
The avalanche came after 2 days of heavy snow, followed by 2 days of heavy rain. Gabriel Wolkin, a program manager with the state's Division of Geological and Geophysical Survey and a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says those conditions are ideal for generating an avalanche.
If there's a recipe for generating an avalanche, you need to have a slope of a certain angle. You need to have a snowpack with weak layers involved, and a trigger is necessary.
Those weak layers create instability, says Wolkin, and they can act as a sliding surface, prompting subsequent heavy snow or rain or blowing snow to trigger an avalanche. Mayor Robert Carpenter says that now that power and phone service have been restored and the road is open, the community doesn't need anything except reassurance that they can travel that road safely.
People are concerned, safety-wise, of traveling that road. We're trying to keep travel down to a minimum. If you don't need to travel on it, don't. But it is an important lifeline to the community because the airport's on that far side.
Carpenter says Chignik is working with the state to assess the risk of future avalanches. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
The Alaska House passed a wide-ranging bipartisan education bill late on Thursday. The $246 million bill would permanently increase state education funding, boost internet speeds in some rural schools, and provide new support to charter schools. House Rules Committee Chair Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican who shepherded the bill on behalf of House leadership, says it's a compromise.
So with this, we are ensuring that schools can plan. Is it everything they want? No. I'll go back to my original statement. Very seldom do you get everything you want. This is one of those examples.
The bill increases the base student allocation, the biggest piece of the state's education funding formula, by $680. That's the first substantial increase since 2016. The House Minority Leader, Independent Representative Calvin Schrage of Anchorage, says it falls far short of what's needed, but it's something.
It provides schools necessary support. Does it make them whole? No. But does it provide essential support to help them keep going? Does it put some fuel in the tank? It absolutely does.
The bill adds a new position in the Education Department dedicated to supporting charter schools and an appeal process for charter schools whose contracts are canceled. The bill would also boost state funding for correspondence students and provide support to young students with reading deficiencies. Senator Bill Wilichowski, the Anchorage Democrat and Senate Rules Committee Chair, said he planned to vote for the legislation and he would not be surprised if the Senate simply voted to adopt the House's changes. He says he's optimistic.
I think this bodes well for the rest of the session. I think this bodes well for the other big issues that we have out there. The issues of defined benefit, the issues of energy legislation, which we have to pass.
But the question left is whether Governor Mike Dunleavy will sign the bill. The governor's press staff did not immediately return requests for comment. Before the package was unveiled on Thursday, the governor's communications director said in a prepared statement that the governor would not support a bill that, quote, fails to address educational outcomes in public schools, end quote. And speaking of education, as libraries across the state face increased scrutiny over what books are appropriate for their collections, the president of the American Library Association is hearing directly from Alaskans. Emily Drabinski was invited to speak at the Alaska Society for Technology and Education Conference in Anchorage on Monday and has spent the week meeting with librarians from across Alaska to hear their struggles and successes. While the state faces unique logistical challenges, Drabinski told Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that many problems facing Alaska librarians are happening across the country.
The struggles I hear from librarians here are the struggles I hear from librarians everywhere. First is a lack of sufficient resources to do their jobs. all over the country and here in Alaska included. We are looking at schools and public libraries that simply don't have sufficient staff to meet the needs of the communities that they serve. And then the sort of rising tide of book challenges and organized attempts to censor materials, those haven't missed Alaska. And we're seeing them all over the country. And certainly, you know, we know that they're happening right here in Anchorage and in the surrounding areas.
In several Alaska communities, including Anchorage, the Matsu, Ketchikan, Kenai, there have been debates over what books are appropriate for libraries and even discussions of removing or banning books. How common is this nationally?
Super common. I wish I was telling you that that's a rare thing and not a problem, but it's not true. I'd say dating back to about 2021, we've seen increases year over year, doubling numbers of books that are challenged and censored in libraries. All of them are books that are related to LGBTQ experience, books about Black life, books about Indigenous life and experience. And that problem is increasing. And, you know, I think it's really important also to look at that problem in relation to other kinds of activities that we see. So any place you see people working to censor materials, you'll also see people working to eliminate access to healthcare for trans and gender variant youth. You'll see people fighting against the right of people of color to access public life. Like, those things happen in common. And so the book censorship issue is everywhere, you know, but so is the attack on LGBTQ plus people.
How does the debate around these issues in Alaska differ from what you heard from other communities around the country?
So in an urban environment, say, there's a library and it's full of staff, right? There are like many, many people working at the library. Here in Alaska, you're very lucky to have anyone working at the library, right? And like, especially in the interior, you have libraries being run by people who have no training or professional development as librarians, who are then asked to stand strong in the face of attempts to censor materials in the library, right? And so part of the function of a profession is to get us all sort of on the same page about what we value. And so one of the things that libraries really value, more than I think other people do, is equal access to resources for everyone in a community. And that means everyone. So we're concerned about making sure that you have a book you want to read, even if you like sci-fi, which to my mind is long and boring and no one should read it, right? But like, I'm interested in you having the book that you want. And that's a professional value that I hold. And so I'm remembering always that there are people in my community who are not like me. As a librarian from Valdez, Alaska was talking about just on my way here, she was like, I'm not the audience for my collection development. So in rural communities in Alaska, you don't have the sort of professional staff that I think is really necessary to stand strong against incursions against intellectual freedom, right?
And these book bans and the threats of book bans aren't anything new, but what do you think is different about the issue today versus how it played out for previous generations?
So what's different now is that instead of getting a concerned community member asking about a single book, you have a situation like you're having right here in the Matsu Valley, where you have people bringing a set of books, a list of titles that they haven't read, that maybe they are cherry picking pieces and parts out of the book to sort of have an objection to them. The books are not, they're all the same. You know, so one of the things that's distinct about Alaska, I've learned, is that the challenges across the country, it's a mix of LGBTQ and BIPOC reading materials, but here it seems to be almost exclusively about LGBTQ plus materials, as well as materials related to sex and sexuality. So what you have people making big demands, right? Like, we want you to get rid of all of these books. And that feels really different. They are both organized and overwhelming in a way that's new. And they are also completely divorced from the reality of the situation, which is that we want kids to read. We want everybody to feel like there's a book that reflects their experience in the library. Like, I did not know. Here's something I didn't know about Alaska. Did you know that right here in Anchorage, you have the most diverse school in the nation?
Several of the most diverse schools in the nation.
Several of the most diverse schools in the nation. And so the work that the school librarians are doing here to make sure that in those diverse schools, there's a book about everybody's culture and experience, that there are books in the multiple languages. You've got a school with 100 languages spoken. And you've got librarians trying to work with a tiny amount of resources that could not possibly be sufficient to what they're asked to do, being attacked for the work they're doing to put a book in a kid's hand to read.
And again, that was American Library Association President Emily Drabinsky speaking with Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early. For listeners looking for a good read, she says the last great book she read was Secondhand Time, The Last of the Soviets by Svetlana Alexievich. And we have a little bit of a fun story to end the midday report with. The world's largest pizza company is delivering something new to Anchorage, stunt marketing with a $25,000 grant for the city's snow plowing.
At Domino's, we're plowing unplowed roads across the country because cold roads shouldn't get in the way of hot pizza. Nominate your town for plowing assistance at plowingforpizza.com.
And Anchorage locals did put in nominations, a significant number, according to a spokesperson for the company. The campaign started after Anchorage got its record-breaking snowfall in November, overwhelming the city's snow removal system and shutting down schools for days. Snow in Alaska's biggest city continued to break records in December and January.
Yeah, so we're the lucky winners.
Veronica Hoxie is a spokesperson for Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson. She says the grant agreement was signed last week and that there are other procedural hurdles to get to clear before the money changes hands. But when it does, what will the $25,000 of snowplowing look like?
In the grand scheme of things, not a whole lot, but it is a fun little, you know, unique funding mechanism.
It's the equivalent of roughly 900 operator hours in the city's street maintenance crews. But one condition of accepting the grant is that the city will share photos and video of its operations to be featured on Domino's Plowing for Pizza website. That's it for the Midday Report. We'll be right back with the Island Messenger and Byways in just a minute.
Wall Street's momentum continues. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. Stocks open higher today. There was a big rally yesterday after NVIDIA reported much better than expected earnings. NVIDIA makes computer chips used in AI. Its results pushed up other tech stocks. Reddit is going public. It's filed paperwork with the Securities and Exchange Commission for an initial public offering. It would trade on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker RDDT. Reddit says it has more than 70 million average daily active users. The Biden administration issued more sanctions against Russia today. The administration says it's targeted more than 500 individuals and entities, including the Mir payment system and people in third countries who the administration says have helped Russia evade sanctions. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Today is Friday, February 23, 2024. The sunrise today was at 8:21 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 6:27 p.m. That makes for 10 hours and 6 minutes of daylight, 4 minutes and 55 seconds more than yesterday. The record high was 54 degrees in 1936, and the record low was set at negative 4 degrees in 1975. Here in Kodiak, it's overcast skies, 32 degrees, east wind 6 miles per hour. The forecast has, it's only partly cloudy, but it looks like the windows here at the studio that it's mostly cloudy out there. No, patches of blue. Rain and snow showers this afternoon with little to no snow accumulation, but Saturday and Sunday could be pretty sunny. Jumping over to announcements, Maine Elementary is hosting a night at the museums on Friday, February 23rd, that's today, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. There'll be activities and information from the Aleutic Museum, the Kodiak History Museum, and the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Center, as well as the Maritime Museum, the Kodiak Arts Council, and more, hosted by Maine parent volunteers. There will be concessions for sale and a silent art auction that runs until 7:30. The event is free and open to the public, but they ask that you bring cash or checks for the silent auction. From the public library, right now is the first gathering of Teen Tabletop from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. Looks like you've got about 30 more minutes. Immerse yourself in the world of tabletop gaming with a collection of over 100 games. That's for folks aged 13 and up. And February's Genre Reading Challenge ends on February 29th. That's next week. Get your genres recorded soon. Sign-up has started for Iditarod, which starts on March 1st. More information can be found on kodiak.beanstack.org. Or you can go to the public library or call them at 486-8686. Senior Citizens of Kodiak's Island Cove Adult Day Program has been helping families to care for their elders for over 35 years. Adult Day services provide relief for the family, reduce isolation for the adult, and offers a fun and stimulating place to spend a few hours in a safe environment. Adults participate in activities to regain strengths, do memory work, and stay connected to what's happening in the community and the world. If you've considered adult day services for your parents or spouse, you can call 486-2203 or visit the website at kodiakseniorcenter.org. And speaking of the Senior Center, they're looking for paper bags. They ask that bags are not torn or soiled, and they can be dropped off at the center between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we've had a few cold nights lately, and the City of Kodiak Public Works Department wants to remind the public with recent cold spells to keep their water running from a faucet to prevent pipes from freezing. During the cold spell without any snow cover, the ground is freezing to a lower depth than past winters. Some residents are starting to experience water service lines that are buried at a shallow depth freezing. While the weather may fluctuate and get warm, they ask the public please continue to keep water running from a faucet even after the weather starts to warm up. The ground will stay frozen for an extended period of time, so pipes will continue to freeze. More information can be found on the city's online winter information guide. If you have questions, you can call Public Works Department at 486-8060. Season 10 of Galley Tables is ongoing right now. The next one will be on March 2nd. That's not tomorrow, but next weekend on the 2nd. The theme will be GOAT, Greatest of All Time. Speaking of Galley Tables, we also have an announcement for Scuttlebutt. It's a Galley Tables workshop for youth. It's on Tuesdays from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library Craft Room. It's a free weekly storytelling workshop for students in high school to practice building and sharing stories with help from experienced storytellers. For more information, you can call 907-486-7396. And from the Kodiak Island Borough School District, there will be a Board of Education special meeting at 6:30 p.m. on Monday, February 26. It'll be in the District Services Conference Room of the Old High School Wing. The meeting will also be streamed live through Teams. Meeting log information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website at kibsd.org. Non-action items will include the superintendent's report, including the fiscal year 25 budget recap. That's it for your community announcements. We'll be right back with Byways.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the February 23rd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Isn't the added daylight these days wonderful? We've gained about 3.5 hours of daylight since the beginning of the year. Not too shabby. plenty of daylight left after the workday to give Fido and yourself a good walk. With this week's low tides in the evening, it's perfect timing for a little beach exploration. The near-town trails are pretty ice-free, too, providing more opportunities for evening walks. Tis the season of the eagles. Everywhere you look, from downtown to the base of Pillar Mountain along Razanoff Drive, and up and down Cannery Row, there are eagles hanging out in trees and on rooftops. Opportunistic feeders and scavengers, they are taking advantage of activity along the waterfront and any seafood bits that might be left behind. In another couple of months, the eagles will be busy building and repairing their nests. Friday night, Maine Elementary hosts a night at the museum, a free, fun evening for all. Local museums will have displays and activities for kids, and there'll be a silent auction for the adults, too. Bring the whole family. That's Friday at Maine Elementary, starting at 5:30. Happy trails. Finally, happy trails to a little dog named Jack Kemp, the mayor of Spruce Cape. A little dog with a huge heart who never saw a treat or a human he didn't like. May your days be filled with squirrels and sausages, Jack. Until we meet again. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.